Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Rose. It's Sunday the 15th of January, and we're officially nearly halfway through the hardest month of the year. It's around the time that many of those who join gyms in the new year thinking about cancelling as they realise that to get fit requires lots of hard work and consistency, and that gym is for life, not just for post-Christmas. Do you like that, Kev?
Yeah, I can confess I still haven't been to the gym, even though I said it last week. I must try.
And what about your goals, targets? You still staying off those sugary drinks?
Yeah, I haven't had a Coke. You know, someone even offered me a Coke. And because I was out in Port Said, because we went to see the Suez Canal and stuff this week, and the salt mountains and different things that we went. And we went to a fish market, chose our fish, and then they cooked it for us. And I'm not a big fish man, but I just had some prawns and some other stuff, which was very nice. But we were all offered drinks, so I said, I'll have a Coke if you can get a Coke, which was like me. And they came back and said, no, we've only got Pepsi. I said, okay, no problem, I'll have water. So yeah. It was like...
It's that Coke-Pepsi debate, isn't it? You know, some people lose their mind, don't they, when people say, have a Coke. Pepsi. No, sorry, we've only got Pepsi. And everyone's just like, no, forget it. I mean, I've been obviously staying off the booze, but I was at a restaurant in London this week, and there was a button next to it that said press for champagne. So you can imagine how hard that one was. Literally champagne at the press of a button. And I was like, that was a really, really tough one I had to abstain from. But it feels good. I'm getting fitter and that. So it's good. It's good. It's good mindset.
Yeah. Fitter, but here goes. We will see. I've basically not really had much sugar at all.
No, it's so amazing how much cutting out things like booze and sugar is you know, what you should see the pounds drop off, especially if we're combined with some good exercise. But so in the week, we saw Harry spill the beans and pretty much endanger his life with statements about the 25 Taliban he killed, talking about them as chess pieces, which I thought was, I'm sure a lot of people thought was pretty insensitive. Russia step up its offensive in the Donbass, and Virgin Orbit stock fall in trading on Monday evening after the company confirmed that its first launch out of the United Kingdom failed to reach orbit. A real shame, as it would have made the UK the winner in Europe's space race. Did you see that? I don't know if you saw the launch, but obviously you saw the news.
No, I didn't actually see it either, so I wasn't following that one. But okay. I definitely saw the whole Harry thing, which was, I don't know, talk about stabbing your family in the back. Yeah. It's
mental, isn't it, really?
It's not cricket, is it, really? No. It's just like, flip me.
And it's funny, because apparently his dad, or King Charlie, said, turn around to him, didn't he, or something like, was just before the Queen passed, and said something along the lines of, don't make my final years misery. And yeah, it's like, what is he doing now? He's doing exactly what his dad said not to do. He's making his final. I mean, they've not commented, and obviously they're not going to, are they? I mean, they can't, can they, really?
No, I was going to say something then, but I shouldn't say it live on it. Afraid.
The other thing, Elon Musk this week has broken a record. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, he's the man who's lost the most money in a year, I think.
Largest loss of personal fortune in history. I mean, we shouldn't laugh, but I mean, it's a couple of hundred billion, but yet he still remains, he's got over $400-500 billion left. So it's, you know, it's not that much of a crying shame, is it?
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, nobody's crying for him either, so let's not worry about it too much. And will it come back? I don't know. I personally, Tesla was massively overvalued, so I don't think it's any.
I mean, the next statement will be Bitcoin starting to move, isn't it? Interestingly, the last two or three sessions, it's constant session, isn't it? It's 24/7. It never stops trading. But the last couple of days, it's moved from the sort of $19,000 into the 20,000s. And I've noticed that the cryptocurrency heat map is all green at the moment. So it's looking very good, certainly looking bullish on the crypto front. So I'd imagine he's going to start making his billions back, because he's, as we know, he's a big lover of things like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, and all those the smaller coins. So I've no doubt he's starting to put his money there. But interesting.
No, he'll fill his pockets, and then he will everybody that he's bought it. But yeah, you were coming on to gold. Gold's moved into 1900s now.
Yeah,
and copper has gone over the fours now, and that's taken it into £4 and 0.18, I think it is, per pound.
Yeah. $9,000 per ton, basically.
Just over $9,000.
Which is on Wednesday. And that's the first time since June, obviously, the end of the COVID-19 restrictions in China. The world's largest consumer of commodities has triggered a jump in a range of metals exposed to Chinese property. You've got copper up, steel up, aluminium up, and some traders expect these gains may not be sustained throughout the year. But what can we say about it? I mean, we can welcome Mr. Copper himself, Mr. Colin Bird. Welcome, Colin. Happy New Year to you.
Not bad. Happy New Year to yourselves and things, I guess. Pretty much as we left them when we down tools at the end of last year. Quite a few things happening for us. And, you know, we sit in quite a few situations where we're certainly keenly awaiting assay results for a few activities we've got on the go. So I guess we start off this year on the edge of our seats and dying to get into it.
Absolutely. I mean, looking at copper price as well in the last sort of two or three sessions, it certainly looks like it's moving in the right direction.
It's inevitable. I've been a copper bull. I've been fairly heavily criticized for it, and I had a bit of mud thrown at me when it dropped to 7.2. But I've never been more confident than I am now. We're not looking at a super cycle, as they call it, or copper run. We're actually looking at a new industrial revolution, the way things are done. And copper and a few other metals we're involved in will play a predominant part. And so, you know, to me, it's absolutely, I anticipated what's happened. And just look at the headwinds against copper. I mean, what's happening in the world negatively, and copper can get to the levels it's at now. And, you know, I guess from the middle of last year, the supply situation, certainly the prospects for supply have got a lot worse. The demand has stayed the same. We're talking about a recession next year. Well, we are next year, 2023. Takes you a time to stop talking about next year. We're talking about a recession this year. People are talking about a soft landing. There'll be no soft landing. There's going to be a real old belt. And, you know, I think we'll all have bruised back sides. I think it'll be a fairly heavy landing. I don't think people are facing reality and governments are facing reality. But having said all of that, the demand side for copper, and, you know, we're still talking about 5% growth there in China. The demand side for copper is looking excellent. The supply side is looking sick. Sick as a parrot, as they say. It's looking very sick. So I think that we're in the right space with a lot of our companies. And I'm so glad that in 2017 we went, and on an ongoing basis, wherever we saw a decent project, if it was within our power and our resources to grab it, we did.
Yeah. Do you think that the relaxing of China's zero COVID policy and obviously what looks like to be a massive opening up has obviously helped some of that drive in the in some of these materials and commodities?
It has, because you've got a pent-up system there. I mean, I think I've said on your podcast a couple of times that it just struck me as quite strange that a company who was not known for its humanitarian activities was locking everybody up for their own safety. Of course, they were frightened of these metal prices absolutely running away with themselves. And then, of course, the people themselves said, You can't lock us up anymore. We want out. And they had the people in the streets. So pent up it is. 5% is a lot of copper, you know. 5% growth is a lot of copper. And there's few of those Southeast Asian countries are not very far behind them. So there's a real pent-up demand, which has always been there. And yet the supply side, as I say, is looking sick. And every day, every other day now on the telly, you know, you'll see car companies coming out with their new posh looking, very, very fancy EV or hybrid, but more and more EVs. I'm seeing that the car companies aren't going through the traders. They're not relying on their procurement division to be able to procure copper, lithium and things like that in the future. They're actually making sure they're closer to the supplier. Because if you embark upon and have assembly lines for electric vehicles, stability of supply is absolutely imperative. And at the moment, you cannot say you've got a stability of supply, copper, lithium, nickel. A lot of these metals are, quite frankly, there is no stability of supply, because wherever you look, you're seeing production shortages, and the analysts and those who know forecasting a deficit between supply and demand. So, you know, it is changing the old nature. changing the old nature where the way metals are traded, in my opinion.
I was reading an article as well, Colin, about Chile in terms of all the things that they're doing in terms of the government taking more tax. The actual grades are reducing gradually over the years. So this situation is going to get worse before it gets better as well, because these are some of the biggest producers in the world. So, I mean, how is that going to affect the projects that you've got in the various companies that you've got?
Well, you know, back to Chile, it's almost scary. They're good for about 30% of world copper production, you know, and it's they're putting really draconian measures. And we're seeing that several of the mining companies have got a few problems with the countries in which they're located. Extra royalties wanted and demands this. And so it's not easy if you're a major copper company and you produce, you know, you spent $6 billion, sorry, and you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring you. And it really is a tough old world, and it's showing how tough it is for our miners that technical risk is one thing for a mining company, but political risk is another. And there's that phenomenon now that a lot of the new copper mines are in jurisdictions where copper hasn't necessarily been worked in large volumes before. But how does it affect us? Well, obviously it has to affect us well. And I don't want to crow, but crow I will. I did say the day of the small miner is back. And quite frankly, it has to be. Because if we get to 2025, 2026, which is 3 years away, nobody should kid themselves that you built a new Escondida or you built a new Bingham Canyon. These things take 10, 12 years to build, and they haven't even been found yet. So the day of the small miner is certainly back. Wherever my sense says that wherever copper can be found, it will be found, it will be in demand. There will be a financier to assist you to get it out. There'll be an off-taker for it. So where does that affect us? Well, Lewin Sobey and Galileo, you know, we're in the final throes now of going out to tender for our project there. And we've obviously, in extract, we've got that huge porphyry in the Lachlan Fold. Every time the price goes up, the numbers for that look a lot, lot better. And of course, we're waiting now. The modelers are working away, and I don't know when we're going to get the result on the combination of the high-grade material for the first 8 to 10 years, how fast we accelerate the mine, what we bring into resource, what we don't bring into resource. Will Askerton Race Course join up? But there's a very exciting project to actually share, you know, it sits in the top league. We've got the Shinganda project with the copper and gold in Galileo. Of course, African Pioneer sits extremely, extremely well in northwest Zambia, where it's got a huge landholding being worked by First Quantum, which is not very far from Kalambila and not very far from Kinsansha, their mine. And of course, as we've said, is in the Western Foreland, Congolese-type mineralization. So that is an absolutely well-placed project showing, making all of the right early noises. And then, of course, let's take a trip over the border, shall we, to Botswana. And there, of course, there's been so much activity the latter part of 2022, which has put a new stamp, a new meaning on the Galileo and African Pioneer projects again. So that is absolutely great. Sandfire now, they've changed CEOs. They're very aggressive for their new mine, which they're not long off starting up. We gave, as you know, in both Galileo and Pioneer, we did deals with them on a number of projects and kept a number of projects. Well, quite frankly, fortune has been on our side. And as I've said before, I think hinted to you before that the projects that we've retained are in the right place. And again, have all got their own individual merits with only a few exceptions. And what's been found in the last half of 2022, I think a lot has been learned up in the Kalahari there. A lot has been learned. You know, dogma sets in when you've only got the first mine. This is the way it's done. This is how the lithology works. This is how the Kalahari works. Then you find your second mine, pretty much the same. And, you know, we people, we're very sort of, we don't like change too much, and we do like regularity. So we stick on a model. That model, that record has been broken, I'm afraid, up in the Kalahari. And the drivers now are being reconsidered by ourselves, are being considered by Sandfire. Kavango, isn't it? And of course, Cobre. So yes, there's a stack of activity, and some of our licenses are looking for different reasons, extremely attractive. So I feel very, very good about that. And then, of course, one can trip, make a trip down to Zimbabwe, not talking copper, but talking battery metals. And, of course, our nickel near the Queen's Mine, where we've found the gold, of course, you know, where we found, where we extended that big gold anomaly. We've talked about the nickel, 12.5 kilometers of nickel underneath the greenstones. And, of course, we've got 502, I think it is, kilometers surrounding Kamatavi, the old tin mine, and we're waiting for the results there from a, which was quite an extensive grab program. So we're right in the middle of information flowing in. If you look at the Lachlan Fold, if you look at the Northwest Zambia, if you look at Namibia, both Open Gorup and Ogorombo, you will see again that they're extremely well-placed in the copper space.
Yeah.
So,
so do you think 2023 is the year for Colin? You know, it's a Colin Birds every year, but do you think that this could be the one where you, you deliver real value? I'm not saying you haven't delivered value for sure, but you really do pull off the that event that, you know, most shareholders are, you know, invest for.
Well, quite frankly, you know, with this, we're a venture capital market, and venture capital has always been about a portfolio approach. Scattergun approaches are fine, but a scattergun approach where you've still got some targeting is better. And if you look at our companies there, you will see that the, all of them are in very good spaces, very good places. We're not, you know, not none of it is real, real green, you know, grassfield projects. A lot of brownfield stuff here. Projects ready to start, big projects, little projects, all in the right metals. So, yes, I think we will have project breakthrough in a number of areas, yeah, and we're doing our level best to make sure that happens and so happens quick.
When you pulled off that the Kawara, was it? I think it was around 2009 or something like that. Do you draw any similarities with any of the projects you've got now? You know, would, how would you sort of rationalize it in terms of with any of your projects you've got now?
The modus operandi was exactly the same. We had a gentleman who worked, we three of us have got together and said, we're going to find a big copper mine. And Zambia seems to be the place to go looking. And we'll do a license review. We'll get what we think is the best license. And we'll stay in there as long as we can. And if it gets too big for us, we'll have to find a JV partner. That was going to be a three-month search, which took 2 years, you know, so we really had to search, found Kalambila, and then we found a Kiwara on the back of it. 19 months later, we sold, as you know, for 265 million Kiwara. And my style since then has not changed. You know, there is a tendency to think when you read a lot of news releases and it's surrounding one individual and his team or his team, that it's a deal a minute. We're not a deal a minute. We're extremely selective in our deals. We take time looking at them. As we are now, we're looking all over the place, copper, copper, copper. What's happening around us makes life a lot difficult. So are a lot more people. There's a lot more planes full going to Zambia and places like that now looking for copper. The deals are getting more expensive. And obviously, it was never easy, but it's not going to get easier and any more easier. The only thing, I guess, working in our favor is that the wherever you look, Canada, Australia, and the UK, the junior stock markets have literally dried up. And it's very difficult to get money for new IPOs. And it's very difficult to, in actual fact, to get money for existing companies to keep meaningfully working on their projects. So I guess that's the only thing which has stopped a real bun feast in places like Zambia, Namibia, and Botswana, because you can't go out shopping for deals with an empty purse.
Yeah.
So in actual fact, that's the that's been to some extent the saving grace. But the biggest saving grace, but as you say, is that, you know, we've been in this space quite a while, and we made this copper decision in 2017. Others are starting to make it now.
Do you think if there was value in the stock exchange, as in more value and more value attributed to these sort of nano cap or junior explorers, that it would force the hand of these majors more because they're worried about how much they may potentially have to pay in any kind of takeover deal?
It's strange, really. You know, you talk about a rate of change of CEOs in the world and the rest of it, but the major mining companies it's for the last couple of 3 years, you know, I've had the highest turnover in CEOs that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And very unforgiving, the shareholders, very unforgiving, the boards, very unforgiving, the analysts. And it's return on investment, earnings, and comparisons. And so they'll still remain careful. The new business department 20 years ago would probably have 50 geologists in it. And, you know, and a couple of guys guiding and, you know, and the country managers. Now, your average new business department of a major mining company has probably got a lot of spreadsheet guys, analysts, probably just a couple of geologists who go out and check when they're about to make an acquisition. So they'll still be careful. But it's like me, you and Kevin, if, you know, we realize there's something up the road there, what wants buying? If one of us don't move pretty fast, one of the others will. And we're not there yet. But I think the end of this year, the middle of next year, we'll see that, listen, folks, we've got to be more aggressive. We'll see chief executive saying, we've got to be more aggressive. We've got to get out there. We've got to make purchases. Only the other day, one CEO of one of the major companies, said, you know, it's been our policy to only go in absolute safe jurisdictions where the deposit has been found, determined, and where there's obvious mining in the area.
Yeah.
He said, we've got to modify that. We've got to modify our thinking and to be a little bit more expansive in our thinking. And just about every single chief executive and chairman, in fact, of the major mining companies have talked about this copper shortage.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Colin, because I was just about the old sort of, let's say, friendly reputation in terms of business in jurisdictions. I was reading an article, I think just yesterday, about First Quantum have threatened to close the vast copper mine in Panama because it was failing to resolve a tax dispute that obviously risked damaging the country's business-friendly reputation. And Panama had demanded that First Quantum pay a corporation tax of something like at least about $375 million a year, along with a certain amount of profit base from their mine, which is, I think, the project ranked at like $1.4 billion of gross profit in 2021. So a massive blow. And they're threatening to basically just put it into care and maintenance, this mine. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it'd be wrong for me to give a thought on that particular debate which is going on between the Panama government and First Quantum. But I think it goes back to what I said much earlier. There's a lot of political risk around at the moment. Not many countries, well, not, I mean, let's face it, we've just been from COVID-19. We've just been through 2.5 years of that. And I'm not sure we're completely through the effects. What government, what country hasn't been beaten up by what happened during that period, and what country isn't doing its best by whatever way it can to get recompense and trying to get normality back into its treasury. So take the fact that you've got new countries into the mining space. Take the fact that people are trying to catch up and bring their economies in line after COVID-19. And don't be surprised if we see the sort of thing which is happening here and there with governments. And of course, going back to Chile as a particular example, this is a different type of issue in as much as you're seeing extreme socialism as a result, possibly as a result of COVID, as a result of other issues where new leaders are looking for a bigger share of cake for the people. So it's endemic. It's around the world and new areas for copper production. Governments who are not used to sharing the proceeds, governments who, because the material is in the ground, feel that it's theirs and the mining company who takes all the risk should make a profit. And they're having to realize, of course, Phil, now is that it's a massive decision for a mining company to build a $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion project. They have to go out and issue bonds for $1.5 billion to take royalty streams. And they too need some security. They too need some guarantees. I remember when I first started in this business, and that's a few years ago now, and when I was, you know, just a mine planning engineer sort of thing, that we made the assumption that the road would reach the mine. We made the assumption the power line would be available. We made the assumption that water would be available and there'd be a railway to take the product away. Now, mining companies are going into areas where basically you have to fly the helicopter in for the drill machine. And there's no railways, there's no roads, there's no ports. And governments, you know, often don't take that into account. There's enormous pre-production risk in terms of infrastructure. that didn't exist 30 years ago. So when people say to you, Kevin and Phil, that, the copper price, 10,000, the mining companies are going to be making a fortune. The mining companies, those major mining companies, are taking a bigger cost burden. They're taking a bigger capital burden. And obviously, the cost of everything has gone up as well. But the capital burden is much greater than it ever was. And then just go back a step even further and then look at the environmental issues. Permitting now, you know, can be as high as 10% of the total CapEx budget to get a mine permitted. It was only a small part of the budget, and, you know, if one goes back 20 or 30 years ago. So we're into an all new area, and we shouldn't go kidding ourselves on that at $10,000 for copper, the big mining companies will be walking around with money coming out the back pocket, the side pockets, and the wallet and everything. They too are in a business which is, the decision to start a new mine is tougher. It's tougher politically, it's tougher technically, and it's tougher financially. Because we are indeed now talking billions for these big new mines, billions of dollars.
What's your thoughts on the gold situation then, Colin? Because you've obviously got other companies that are in the gold. We've talked about copper, but how do you feel that gold's going to go? You know, we've got obviously the ramp up in extract in terms of the Ferbride. There's other opportunities with gold in the portfolio as well. How do you see gold going? I mean, the US dollar has come down 12% or so since we were talking in November, and it's pushing on going down further, at least another 5-7%. And obviously that has had a positive effect on the price of the gold and also the copper as well. So yeah, what's your thought on that?
I spent a career not understanding it because, unlike copper, lithium, and nickel, and things like that, there's a real demand factor. So you are looking at supply demand, and obviously, if you're not able to supply, and demand is there, then the price goes up. But gold, of course, is also driven by lots of other fundamentals. But as a broad statement, with the amount of geopolitical risk that we've got around the world, with moving currencies like we've got around the world, and with currencies losing value as rapidly as they are around the world, with the Bitcoin not being the magical thing that it was supposed to be, gold is certainly going to stay, in my opinion, somewhere around where it is now. There'll be a bit of, there'll be the dips and there'll be the rises. But I think where we are at about 1850, 1800, seems to me to be the right level. And as you say, our Fairbride mine now is really kicked into gear. We went through the startup of gold lockup, making sure that we've got the stores full so that we can, you know, you're in a pretty remote place there. You can't start a mine hand to mouth. And that mine is beginning to show its mettle, so to speak. Built a very nice plant. Our partners have built an extremely nice plant. All credit due to them. I think in 2023, about to enjoy the benefits of what has been a above average technical build, an engineering build, a gold price where we sit now, and we're just coming out of the rains. And I'm very, very optimistic for that project. So optimistic am I for that project that, you know, no sooner have you started it, then the next question is, how can we make it go longer, Kevin? How can we make it last longer? And the obvious thing would be, you know, a sulfide plant. You know, a flotation plant on the end. And of course, that's the sort of thing we're looking at. And then the interim, we, of course, one is pursuing drilling programs to find more and more of the oxide copper to prolong the existing life. So we've had a very strong start and very bullish for the project. And as for the gold price, I think it'll bounce about where it is now with dips and troughs. With troughs and the occasional spike. But back to our own project. Very bullish about that. Shinganda, of course. Shinganda in Zambia, that's got a nice accompanying gold to the copper, which is good. As is our Namibia projects. We've got very, very nice gold credits. Very nice gold credits. Both those near Windhoek and those at Open Goro. So, it's nice to have some gold around your copper. Bad news a few years ago, but now you can sell a copper gold concentrate and it's no big deal. It might have been a bit of an issue some years ago, but it's not It's not now.
My South African friend keeps telling me I have to go to Namibia because it's a beautiful place. So I'll have to get down and see some of those mines, I think.
Well, that's very good advice. Namibia, I think, has been the neglected country. It's had very big operations, of course, but it's a pleasure to work in the country. Very strong government, very pro-mining government, good infrastructure, and it really is set up to go. So
I'd like to visit the Namib Desert and the Skeleton Coast, and it's meant to be beautiful. Like you can do like a 10-day hike through all those, you know, stopping off, a bit like a run, I guess, like an ultra marathon. I'd like to do that. I think that'd be awesome.
Can you do that in a car?
No, I'd run it. Do it. Camp out. Do it over sort of 14 days. About 800 miles, I think it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of primary roads, but there's a lot of desert roads as well, Kevin. It's a good country to navigate, and beautiful in its desolation. So to speak,
I've been in the Jeep holding the water for you, Phil.
Yeah, give it a go.
The other situation then, Colin, is we're going down to Indaba, which is the mining conference that is held every year in South Africa in Cape Town. But before we go there, we're going to Johannesburg to see a Jubilee plant, and then we're heading into Zambia. So give us an idea of what our itinerary is going to look like.
Well, I understand you're going to see the Jubilee Zambian operations as well. They're Bonavacuba and probably Kabwe. And, of course, nearby we've got the Kikoi, so you'll see the extract new mine that we've kicked up. Other projects that we're very interested in that vicinity, we'll show you those as well. And of course, you'll see the Lowen Sobe property and its proximity to Mufulira, and you'll see how very well placed it is to process an infrastructure, and how well placed it is for power and everything else. So that will be a bit of a whistle stop tour, 4 or 5 days for you. But I think you'll really benefit and understand some of the opportunities we've got. And we'll see also that it's easy when we sit here in these podcasts, you know, life out there is very tough, and to bring operations on stream, get the negotiation in place, get the licenses, establish the relations in the local communities, and all of those things are a necessary part of getting a mine on the road and keeping it on the road. So you'll see just what is involved, even in a small copper project. And I think what's in store for you is a very interesting trip.
Yeah, and we'll catch up with you in Cape Town and probably do some sort of podcast.
Indeed.
Good. Yeah, give people an idea.
No, we'll look forward to seeing you soon, Colin, and thanks very much for the update. So a pleasure as always.
Thank you very much, gents, and it's always a pleasure to talk a business, talk about a business that I love dearly, and hopefully just the sheer dynamics of the prices of copper and our other metals, this market will realize that we junior miners, we pioneers, we better get in there, because that's the club you want to be in, the call options to these metals. That's what we juniors are. I think it won't be long now before the market wakes up to that. I really look forward to that. Thank you again.
Cheers, Colin.
All the best, Colin.
Always good to catch up with Colin, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a font of knowledge, especially when it comes to the mining thing. I mean, he professes not to be Mr. Geology, but he has a lot more knowledge than most of us, so this is all good. I mean, I don't see anything but strength in the copper price anyway, for sure. I don't see anything but strength in the gold price for the next year, at least. And, you know, if these copper shortages really, really, really do exist, then we're going to see very high spikes in copper prices.
Yeah,
I think even double what it is now is possible. You know, and then obviously maybe demand will weaken if the price goes up drastically. But you know, we have a story, don't we? EV cars and the opening up of China again, and the big infrastructure bills in most of the Western countries, especially in the US, especially in Europe, even in the UK, they're pulling some of them back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, AFP had a good week last week. I think it was up around about 30, 33% from what I remember. So that looked like some volume came back into the market. And don't forget, We're awaiting the quarterly report from First Quantum on that drilling progress. So that'll be one that I'm, you know, hopefully looking forward to the results on that one. Ben had a good week as well. Do you want to just talk through that announcement?
Yeah, so Ben's Creek, the metallurgical coal miner in West Virginia, effectively said that the second high wall miner was on the way. Some parts had arrived. We got some pictures there on Friday, I think, of the control unit at the top on its way. So it should be there in, 7 to 10 days, and then maybe another 7 to 10 days to put it together. Early into February, I think you're going to start production. All the shelves are built, you know, to start the mining. It's effectively small holes, and then they move along another small hole, and then they backfill them all as they come to support the mountain. So yeah, that happened. And also a note from WH Island, was it? A broker's note, given current price target of 86 pence, which considering Ben is just under the 30p now, is a nice upside. And it also stated clearly that it was likely to become a dividend stock within the next sort of period of time. I think the interesting thing was they used 225 for met coal. I was a bit skeptical about some of the costs involved, as in they were a bit low, but then the met coal price was also very low. So, I think we have any uptick in met coal price. It also stated they were getting $300 a ton for the met coal in some of the stuff that they've outlaid already. So they've got guaranteed price on some of it. I think it's, you know, as long as the operation continues, we shouldn't say it's a no-brainer, but why won't it go up? I mean, I think it could be a quick gain, but it also could just be a slow burner and just keep going up as it gets tighter and tighter, you know. This time last year, it was, 40p, 36p, and, you know, here we are back again, 28, 29p. And, what will it be when we visit in May? Who knows? But I think it'll be significantly higher than it is now. Yeah. Something drastic is going to happen for it not to, because there's a lot of steel. The same story as copper in a way. There's a lot of steel required to build all these infrastructures. The met coal is required for the steel. And there isn't enough of it. You know, there isn't enough of it because basically coal was the pariah and nobody wanted to mine it. And the price was through the floor because of all the green lobbying. Yeah. And that's it, basically. So
there's an interesting point, wasn't there, that they talked about, obviously, as operations continue, they expect that the wash plant yield could increase from the 60% that they obviously used in their model. And they believe that a higher yield is realistically achievable. I think Marshall Miller and Associates indicate that a yield of around 80% could be achievable at Ben's Creek, which would be phenomenal. I mean, you know, you look at that, and they're also, so they talk about this 15-year DCF, this discounted cash flow model that they use. I think it's a 15-year operation. It's a 15-year DCF, and they consider that 25 million tons of raw coal will be mined, which is just mind-blowing, really, for considering that it was a shuttered, mothball mine site only 18 months ago.
Yeah. And if you do the calcs on that, that's like 1.6 million, 1.7 million a year. So we really are just sort of starting, if you like. And, you know, if we get half of that this year, 700,000, 800,000 tons, then that will be a real result, I think, and produce lots of cash flow, which then in turn should produce a dividend. And then the third high wall miner, which is part of that contract now that they can have a third wall miner, is then the possibility to take it a million plus over the time period. Wash plant's plenty big enough. And it also said that 15 years was there because of the wash plant and the fact how long will the wash plant last? Well, several million invested into the wash plant to enhance it and to make it its life longer, could easily add another 5-10 years, I think, to the whole process. So,
dividend pay, I mean, that they've included a 5p or 6 cent dividend in financial year 24, rising to 8p, 9.6 cents in 2025, which would place a high yield on the stock, 18% rising to 30%, obviously on the current share price, but one they feel is justified. So it all looks very interesting.
And it's just now got to happen, hasn't it? It's just that's the reality of it. Second high wall mine is going to come. We know that the mining ability is there. A lot of experience there. I don't think things are going to go wrong. I mean, coal, basically, with these machines, you're digging a hole straight through the mountain and the coal's coming straight out, and then you're moving along and building it. I suppose the riskiest part is just knowing where the next lot of coal is and the benching. And they've got, I think, 4 or 5 years ahead of them of planning where they're going to go. They're also going to start doing drilling to increase their reserves. So that's going to start happening. That's going to increase the value of the company as well. So yeah, it's all set. And now people have to sort of start to believe as it starts to happen. And then I think the share price will follow.
Indeed. Yeah. No, I agree. Moving on to, I attended a investors evening. Proactive put it on this week, and talking there was Prospects Energy, obviously Mark Routh, the CEO, he gave a nice presentation. He did a kind of a recap of what the company have achieved in 2022. And he also talked about what obviously potentially investors can look forward to in 2023. And when you look at them at a glance, that they've actually had a very good run. If you look at the chart, Proactive rated Prospects as the top performing stock on AIM with a rise in 2022 of 304%. So it really did have a good run. If you remember, we were talking about it initially, and it was in the 5p range, wasn't it? And it's moved up to sort of 17 pence. So had a very good run. Market cap around the sort of 45 to 50 million market cap. Ticker is PXEN. There's 278 million shares outstanding. And one thing you do notice about it is the number of shareholders in terms of it's held very tightly. I think there's about 50% of the stock are held by, obviously TOR and directors, etc. So it's very sticky. And you just look at the assets that they've got, and they're obviously, they've got the producing in Spain from the El Romeral power plant, which is in Carmona, not too far from Seville. And El Romeral is actually one of only three onshore gas deposits currently producing in Spain, which is phenomenal. The others are Marismas and Viura. So to have that asset is pretty remarkable. They have the asset. They own 49.9% of El Romeral, and Warrego own 50.1%. And as you probably have seen some of the news releases, there is an ongoing bid for the 50% for 50.1% from Warrego. It's very hard to say Warrego Energy, based in they're down in Australia. Now, Mark is obviously a non-executive on the board of Warrego as well. And it'll be interesting to see whether a bid comes for that other part of that. So what is happening? There's also the other thing that could be a game changer for the company is if they get the exploitation concession for the Tesorillo, which was submitted in May 2021. I think that could be a game changer. That's another asset that they own 15% of, and Warrego have the other 85%, and the Prospects have got an option to increase to 49.9%. A massive area. So that's one to look out for, but obviously that's all down to Spanish permitting. I mean, it could take some time. The other thing they're looking forward to is this first gas in Italy, as we've talked about, which is happening hopefully Q1, Q2. They've obviously set things up very well there. It's well tested gas to surface in January 2018, so they know it flows. It's suspended and obviously awaiting that production permit. So. Yeah, hopefully that they'll get the first gas in Q1, Q2. What are your thoughts on that? We've obviously talked to Mark in the past. What do you make of that in terms of profit generation?
Yeah, I mean, we chose Prospect as one of our top 12 stocks of 2023 after some discussions with Mark. And I don't really see. I mean, the gas is there. It's really just getting it out the ground, and it's coming up naturally anyway. The pipeline's going to be there. Once they start producing, even though the gas price has come off a bit, it's just going to be a complete cash cow. It's just going to produce cash upon cash upon cash upon cash.
Yeah.
I think he was talking $8 to $10 million in the first in this year, I think.
Yeah.
And then next year, obviously, it'll be the full 12 months. So I think it's a bit more. So if you're producing that much cash, then, your market cap has got to be probably even significantly higher than it is now. I think we put a target of 30 or 35p on it. And I think that will happen. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't, because, you know, there's money coming out the ground in the gas, and that's going to translate to the share price. And I can see it being a play that will either push more money into new product, new situations, new opportunities, and also start to pay the shareholders back as well. So
yeah, I think for 37% WI, they're looking at post-tax NPV 10 of 5.43 million euros and a cumulative net cash flow of circa 12.6 million euros.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a lot
of money. And you look 12. At
12.6
you know,
million euros cash flow is 10 million, what, 10 million quid a year, maybe a bit more.
And what sort of PE? I mean, you know, and there's talk of them actually being able to increase the net production by 3 to 4 times as well from the Italian project. So
So if you do the maths on the 3 times, like it's bananas. Even if you use a PE of 10, depending on how long the life of the scenario is, but if you use PE of 10 on 10 million pounds, you know, you got 30 million pounds, and then times 10, you know, you do the maths, that's 300 million quid as a market cap. And that's without taking into account any other projects.
Spain, exactly. This is just purely from the Selva project. And they reckon Selva East is even bigger. You know, you look at it, that's the one. And the beauty of this is he's said that he doesn't feel there's any need to raise in 2023, because obviously once the profits start coming in, they can use that, the profits, to start putting out to other projects. And, you know, in fact, Sarah Lowther asked him, is there any potential for M&A in 2023? And he just said, yes. It was brilliant, a resounding yes. It's like, I'm not, you know. So yeah, very interesting company, very interesting. And the shareholders that were there, you could tell it's got a very good retail following, really good retail following. Yeah. So
and with that much cash, you're going to be able to do good business for sure.
Exactly. Anything else? You know, so you want to talk about FTSE and performance there? I mean, it's encouraging.
Yeah, well, the FTSE's finally getting out of its grave, maybe. You know, hit 7744, I think it was. Or 7844, sorry. And the all-time high is 7877, I think. So it's getting there. Why? It's on the back of some good retail figures, I think, on the back of the mining stocks all going up as well. The oil and gas plays, we're not doing anything bad either. So, you know, the scenario is, yes, we're going to see the FTSE, I think, go through an all-time high. But let's put this in perspective. 2006, it was only 10-15% away from this figure.
Yeah.
So, and 2018, which seems like yesterday, but was 5 years ago, was the last time it was at this level. So, you know, we're not exactly shooting the lights out here in good old United Kingdom in terms of stock markets. When you think about it, in 2005, I think 2006, the DAX was at the same level. In fact, it was below the FTSE for a long time and then started to come through. Now, the DAX went up to 14, 15, 16,000. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure where it is now, actually.
The DAX is at 15,000, 15,086.
Okay, so yeah, the DAX is now at 15,000. So what has happened in the German market is that the German market has doubled in value in that time frame, and the UK market has stood still. Now, have we got some catching up to do in terms of valuation? I think there's absolutely no doubt. If you look through the FTSE 100 companies, they are all lowly valued in terms of PE ratios and dividend yields. We continually be one of the best dividend payers in the world. So money is starting to trickle down. I mean, you got the FTSE 250 also did well.
Yeah.
The AIM 100 or whatever it's called did well. So we're seeing in the first couple of weeks of January, you know, stocks really starting to do very well. I mean,
I mean, we will
come on to our 12 stocks at another time, but there's three of our 12 stocks already have done in excess of 25% return in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So the
UK GDP obviously grew by, it's I don't want to clutch at straws, but it was 0.1% month on month in November, obviously, slowing from October's unrevised growth of 0.5%. It had been obviously expected to shrink by about 0.2%, but they reckon it was obviously helped by the start of the Football World Cup, which boosted consumer-facing sectors. But yeah, and then but then it fell by 0.3% in the 3 months to November 2022 compared to with the 3 months to August 2022. So it is 0.3% below the pre-COVID level. So let's just see what happens, I guess, because it could just be skewed figures.
Yeah, I think we're going into a recession, but how big a recession that's going to be, who knows? You know, the economy hopefully is slightly more resilient. We've got people who have got savings and have got money and can go through this, but we've also got a huge group of people who just don't have those things and are going to have problems. Yeah. And that's why it's going to be a tough winter for many families and many situations, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same happening here in Egypt. We had another devaluation this week again on the dollar. Now the British pound is now 36 and a half, I think it is, to one Egyptian pound. When I moved here, it was 8, and that was 10 years ago. Only last year, it was 15. So basically, against the British pound and the dollar, the Egyptian currency is like basically more than halved, and it looks like it's going to continue as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of it, I'm not saying that just for Egypt. I'm saying that there is a lot of third world countries out there that are in pain, you know, and the US dollar is causing them pain. Yet at the same time, the US dollar now is threatening to break down again. This week it broke down to the 101s from the highs of 114, 115. You know, and it's up and down in between that 101 and 103. And if it breaks through the 101 and goes down, then the next trap is, I think, about 95, which will take us that the world will improve, but it's also going to have a big effect on copper price, on gold price. All denominated in US dollars are going to increase in value without doubt from the US. And the sterling's going to get a bit stronger as well against the dollar, which won't do it any harm, I don't think, you know, because it's been at record lows, obviously, recently. So, yeah, lots happening. And as I've said before in the past, stock markets should be forward-looking things. So what is the world going to look like in 9 to 12 months? That's what the stock market should be telling us now. Stock markets all around the world in the first 2 weeks of the new year have gone up. Why? You know, because they
Let's hope we see a turnaround because it's needed. So,
you know,
I mean, so I looked at some of the week's AIM's highlights that have pulled out was there's Bella Sciura. They've had a good week. Oxygen unit manufacturer and distributor continued with a rapid expansion after they received orders for 2,850 export units and shipped 1,226 units in 2023. That's a lot higher than the 377 delivered in the same period a year ago. So that was a good mover. Tech Capital, another one. Tech, they've got a TEK is the ticker, share price around 16 pence, market cap 23 million. They've had a good run of the last couple of weeks. Obviously, Bella Sciura is one of the companies within their portfolio. And they're also preparing for Microsoft, another investee company, to list on AIM in 2023. So watch out for that one. Microsoft has developed salt technology that reduces sodium in salt by 50% without sacrificing the taste. So for anyone, obviously, who you know can't have salt in the diet or has to reduce it, then that's a game changer. They appointed Zeus Capital as their nomad in late 22 and are currently working towards an IPO. So keep an eye out for that one. Nightcap. Ticker is NGHT, share price of 8p, market cap 15.9. Their revenue surged in the most recent quarter with a group revenue increasing to 12.9 million, 60.9% increase from the 8 mil generated in Q2 of 2022. They're a bars group, said like-for-like sales grew 4.7% as they opened 6 new sites to now 36 bars. They're headed by, I don't know if anyone watches Dragon's Den, but Sarah Willingham. She's the head, and she said she could not be prouder of the entire Nightcap team for their efforts during a period disrupted by strike action. Another one in the hospitality sector is Tortilla Mexican Group. Their revenue increased 20% to 57.7 million in the year to the 1st of Jan. Increase in revenue means the revenue has doubled from 26.8 million 2 years. They acquired Chilango in 2022 and have opened a number of new tortilla branded stores. So watch out for that one, Kev, when we're in London next. Maybe Tortilla Mexican Grill is the place to go. And then finally, this one has had a run of late, obviously probably buoyed by the Bitcoin moves, is Quantum Blockchain Technologies. QBT is the ticker. Again, similar to Argo Blockchain, who've had a very good run of late, considering that they nearly suffered, pretty much went into administration, but obviously managed to seal a deal while they sold their Texas assets and retained some of the profits. But Quantum Blockchain saw their momentum continue this week after confirming that they've retained the services of Dr. Lov Kumar Grover as a special consultant for their asset assessment of their quantum mining algorithm. Quantum are developing solution to mine Bitcoin cheaper and quicker, so more of an efficiency drive. Market cap of 20 million, share price of 2p. So that's a little roundup of the week in AIM highlights.
Yeah, it's good. And when you mentioned to me about Nomads, we also had a new appointment of a Nomad for Kibu on Kibo. The 11th. Kibo on the 11th.
And, you love that one. I think if you had it written down, you would always say Kibu.
The reason why I say Kibu is because I call my wife Boo and I'm K-E, Kevin. So some of our businesses are called Kibu. So okay. That's why. So Kibu, whatever way you want to say it, has come back on the market. And Katora Gold also changed, and it actually rocketed, I think. I was surprised, really, that Kibu didn't go again as well, because before it was taken off the market there for a month, it was about 0.18, 0.19 comfortably, no problems. And because the RNS went out within a couple of hours, it dropped like the 25-30%. So that seems a bit of an opportunity, I have to say, because it seems pretty undervalued for all the assets it holds. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how the market reacts to some of these things as we go forward. And it's good. Been a good start so far. So let's hope the start continues.
More of the same, please. I see a lot on Twitter, a lot of people saying the same thing. Had a good couple of weeks in the markets. And as I say, let's hope that we see this is a real turnaround, a bit more positivity. For sure. And if I don't speak to you before, have a good rest of the weekend, and we'll catch up next week.
Yep. All the best.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.